Runner goes. Ramirez rips it. Deep right field is Bell. He won't get it. The Indians are back on top. His second two-run homer of the afternoon. And Jose Ramirez once again has rescued Cleveland.
Cleveland win just over the Royals by a final of 4-2. Royals had a 1-0 lead on Salvador Perez home run in the fourth. Indians went up 2-1 in the bottom of the sixth. And the Royals tied it with a run in the seventh. But the Indians with that two-run homer. The difference in the game, 4-2. The homer off of Greg Holland, who takes the loss. Jacob Junis was outstanding. Five innings, one hit, two walks, six strikeouts, no runs. And Jesse Hondo gave up a two-run homer to Ramirez. And then later on it was Holland. So the bullpen really for the first time failed for the boys in blue yesterday. And offensively, not a lot going on for the Royals as they struck out 14 times. 12 times to Shane Bieber, the reigning AL Cy Young Award winner, who got a no decision as the Royals are now 3-2 on the season. And the Royals will be back in action coming up today as they are in Chicago. Take on the White Sox, 3:10 first pitch, and it's Brad Keller on the hill. His second start of the year, his first one didn't go very well, but he got no decision despite giving up a lot of runs in a short period of time. His ERA is 40.50. Obviously, that'll come down. But Brad Keller on the hill for the boys in blue. Royals 3-2, White Sox 3-4. Carlos Santana returning to Cleveland, where he played his whole career until signing with the Royals offseason. Got a standing ovation. Hunter Dozier was back in the lineup. But the Royals do lose. But Jacob Junis was really, really good yesterday, and that might be something to keep an eye on here in the near future. All right, local sports. We have an athlete of the week to let everybody know about.
Yeah, Beloit sophomore Logan Arrowsmith, NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week, pitched an outstanding game for the Trojans on Tuesday afternoon, helping them to their first win on the baseball diamond here in 2021. Trojans won 1-0 over Minneapolis. Arrowsmith pitched a complete game shutout, giving up just one hit in the process and striking out six Lions batters. Minneapolis had runners at second and third in the top of the seventh inning with a chance to tie or take the lead, but Arrowsmith and the Trojans got out of that jam to hold on to the 1-0 shutout. So also big-time performance as Arrowsmith outdueled Minneapolis pitcher Spencer Davidson, who had just pitched a no-hitter with 17 strikeouts in his first outing in the first game of the year last week for Minneapolis against Sacred Heart. So that was the first loss of the season for Minneapolis as well. So again, Logan Arrowsmith, the NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. You can read more about him at NCCastSports.com. And if you have anybody you'd like to nominate for Athlete of the Week, visit NCCastSports.com for more information about that. The Beloit Trojan baseball team will be back at it today again as they have a doubleheader at Lincoln against Lincoln, Sylvan, Lucas. Beloit enters 1-5, Lincoln, Sylvan, Lucas 1-3. That doubleheader starting at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Lincoln. And also the Beloit softball team will be at Sylvan, Lucas, Lincoln. That's in Sylvan Grove here this afternoon. The Lady Trojans coming into the game with a record of 4-0. Sylvan, Lucas, Lincoln is 3-1. That doubleheader starting at 4 o'clock as well in Sylvan Grove this afternoon. So let's look at what's going on as far as baseball and softball. Also, actually, the Concordia softball team is at Riley County this afternoon, starting at 4:30 as well. So that's what we've got for softball. And then high school track and field, the Concordia Invitational starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Beloit and Concordia competing there from the area. And then high school golf, Tipton opens their season at the Chase Invitational this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Again, all the latest schedules for your favorite high school sports teams can be found at NCKSSports.com.
All righty. Ryan LaFever, the voice of the Royals, was with us yesterday on the show. If you missed that interview, it's on our podcast page at our website, katycountry94.com. Just go to the Sports Ticket podcast page, and you can listen to that interview or others that you've missed in the past. And Ryan was on with us yesterday, and I asked him, what are the expectations for the Royals? And this is what Ryan had to say.
They have to start winning more games than they lose. And so I don't think it's an unfair expectation at all for them to have a season above 500 and have a contending season in the division. There are good teams in the division. There are also question marks. Minnesota has proven that they're the class of the Central Division, but you've got guys that are getting up there in age. Chicago had a really good year last year. They faded a bit at the end, but they took a big jump forward. They're a team that plays with a lot of emotion. That can be a good thing, and that can also work against a team being successful. I think Tony La Russa was a good addition for them because I think he'll be a good steadying force for that. Detroit's rebuilding, and Cleveland is. Cleveland's always going to be better than they should be because of their manager, Terry Francona. So there are good teams, but there are a lot of question marks, and I think the Royals should be right in that mix.
Ryan LaFever, voice of the Royals, with us yesterday. I would agree with him on all that. I think the Royals do need to take that step forward this year. Maybe they don't make the playoffs, but if they could take that step forward like they did back in 2013 before they made it to the World Series in 14 and then 15, I think that would make sense. And we had talked about also how the Royals were, you know, not having a full year last year and hurting some of their young development, but that's true for any team in the major leagues, although the Royals were maybe more of a younger team that maybe needed that year of experience. But we shall see how it plays out, but the Royals definitely have a team on paper. It looks like they can at least be a team around 500 or maybe better and then build off of that in the future. KU men's basketball, they add a talented guard. You may remember him from, well, I guarantee you Shocker fans do. Drake, point guard, Joseph Yusufu, he's going to go to Kansas. And he's a sophomore point guard originally from Chicago. And that's a big loss for Drake, obviously, but a big pickup for KU. He averaged 13 points in 31 games. And he came off the bench Drake's first 24 games this year. Averaged 23 points per game over the final nine games of the season. And, of course, in the NCAA tournament, he was very good and played very well against Wichita State and also USC. And so list him as a point guard, although, you know, when I was watching Drake play, I didn't really think of him as necessarily a point guard. I thought more of a combo guard, which would fit in with Kansas because DeJuan Harris, a kid that, you know, we don't know about him offensively. And Kansas, no doubt, not having that true point guard last year, experienced point guard, hurt them quite a bit with Devon Dotson going pro. So good pickup for the KU men's basketball team. KU introducing their new athletic director yesterday, and he is very young. He's Travis Goff in his early 40s. He's younger than me, and he's got a job that's going to pay him about $700,000 a year as the new athletic director at the University of Kansas, although that is the worst salary of all the ADs in the Big 12. So, yes, perhaps you want to get into administration and be an athletic director at a college university, and you can make a lot of money at Power 5 universities. So Travis Goff, a KU alum from Dodge City originally, and very emotional in his return to Kansas, and this is really, honestly, his dream job.
A moment like this is incredibly humbling and puts a lot of things in perspective. And I want to try and paint a picture to the best of my ability. Over the last few weeks, I've felt this amazing wind behind my back, and it might get emotional, to be honest with you. This supportive push. And for me, it starts with my faith and my trust in God, who has guided us here. And there are countless people who've helped provide that additional burst of wind, that energy, that momentum for me that's brought me here today. You hear about dream jobs, destination jobs. This is my destination job. This is where I received an incredible education, where I started my career, and where I fell in love with college athletics. It's the absolute honor of my professional lifetime to come back and serve my alma mater, a place that has done so much for me. And thanks to the tradition of excellence, the incredibly strong foundation in place, the amazing student athletes, coaches, and staff, the partnership with the broader institution and Chancellor Girard, and the passion and support from Jayhawks over the world. Together, we will build and sustain a preeminent holistic intercollegiate athletics program. This will be achieved via an unrivaled commitment to enhancing our student athlete experience. And in doing so, we're going to unite, inspire our campus, our community, and our alumni base. It's taken more than two decades, so many selfless mentors and supporters, and some divine intervention to help me find my way back to Lawrence. But I can assure you, it's been worth every second of that wait. Rock Chalk Jayhawk.
And Goff's message to the KU supporters, boosters, alums, and all.
To our fans, our donors, our supporters, our season ticket holders, your dedication and passion is felt truly all over the world. And I've felt that every day in my 17 years of having been away from Lawrence. We're going to win championships, and I can't wait to get you back in our stadiums and bring that energy and passion to our student athletes again. We have work to do, there's no questioning that, but that work's already begun. So keep supporting and spreading that KU passion and stand by us.
Travis Goff, the new athletic director at the University of Kansas, also had a message for the coaches, the staff, and the student athletes.
To the coaches and staff at KU, we're going to do incredible things together. We're going to propel the University of Kansas forward, and we're going to have some fun doing so. We're going to represent our alumni and our fan base, and we're going to lift up this university, and we're going to lift up, most importantly, our remarkable student athletes. To those nearly 500 student athletes, you are why we are here. You are why this career exists. And I'm going to remind myself of that daily. We can't wait to support you in every way we can going forward in competition, in the classroom, socially.
And then there is a thing called the KU football program, and Goff was asked about the state of the football program with Emmett Jones as their acting or interim head coach.
Really wanted to prioritize this to get out to practice, to observe Coach Jones and the staff. The energy was incredible. I was able to witness it with my own eyes, just what a great job Coach Jones and that staff has done, keeping this group together and having the kind of energy you need to have in spring football. What I said to them is where we're at exactly on day two. I come in open-minded. I come in wanting to listen, learn, absorb, understand where we're at with this football program. There's a plan, and it's more about the win and the understanding of how to go forward in that plan.
So what about his confidence in building this football program at the University of Kansas?
We've, at the University of Kansas, learned a lot over the years. And building football programs is incredibly difficult. It's certainly difficult in the Big 12 Conference, one of the best in the country. And it's certainly difficult even more so without any kind of continuity. So I think those learnings that I have kind of witnessed from afar, the things that I've been able to see at the places I've been, and then what I know to be incredibly clearly the commitment from Chancellor Girard, from the leadership, from the staff and the group that's here to build this thing in the right way. That's all the confidence I need coming in, and that confidence is incredibly high.
So the athletic director, the new one at KU, Travis Goff, he takes over a program that is looking for a head football coach, and also there is the cloud of the NCAA investigation into the men's basketball program, and your head coach just received a lifetime contract, which he is in approval of, by the way, even though he's not the one that officially gave that contract to Bill Self. Here's what Goff had to say about addressing those two things, head football coach opening and the basketball investigation.
When you walk into a scenario where there's an immediate need and an immediate need to focus in on some critical factors, if you've lived that and had those experiences, then you're well suited and well prepared. And I believe that to be the case in this situation. I think when you have the support and the foundation that the University of Kansas provides, and that KU Athletics provides, there has never been a shadow of doubt in my mind that we're gonna navigate that successfully and any of the other things that lie ahead, because there'll be more challenges. There's no questioning that. And as Chancellor Girard indicated, the shifting landscape of college athletics, I'm really excited about KU being a leader in that.
So really didn't answer a question there, which is fine because he's just the first day on the job, basically. So, you know, he's going to gather all that information. But he's a KU grad from 2002. He's 41 years of age. He has no experience in the university athletic department's top job. And so he has obstacles to overcome. He knows that. The chancellor, Douglas Girard, knows that as well and said that was a question that we all had. But when you look at what Travis brought to the table, irrespective of him being a Jayhawk, you look at the skill set, all the experiences, and talk to the people around him, you realize this guy's a rising star. He's going to make the next move, and we wanted it to be at the University of Kansas. Bill Self added, I don't think you go hire a guy because he's a Jayhawk. You hire the best candidate. He's the best candidate. He's a Jayhawk, so I think that brings instant credibility. His boss had nothing but good things to say there at Northwestern. He's now the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference, who was Goff's boss and mentor at Northwestern. Age is just a number. You can hang on to it if you want to, or you can look at the substance. And I think what's really impressive about Travis is the substance. He doesn't get that job because he's a Kansas kid. He got the job because he was ready, and he is ready. So, Travis Goff, KU alum, originally from Dodge City, alum in 2002, at the age of 41, is the new athletic director at the University of Kansas. Makes sense to me. It really does. You got KU ties, which Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, has told us is probably pretty important. I think there was a disconnect from the athletic department in regards to the athletic director and boosters and alums. I think this is going to reconnect some things there. You know, we've seen what happened at the University of Nebraska, and they're still trying to reconnect stuff. That's why they kind of brought Scott Frost, and they hired a new athletic director and Bill Moose. And so there was a lot of damage done during the really kind of the Pelini, and then you go, of course, into the Callahan and Riley years at the University of Nebraska. In Kansas, a lot of damage has been done, really, honestly, ever since Mark Mangino was fired in regards to the football program. And then, of course, the damage done, you could certainly throw some there towards Shane Zinger's way. And of course, with Jeff Long as well. So Travis Goff is the young AD at the age of 41. He'll take over managing and running the athletic department there at Kansas University. And to me, instead of getting a guy that's been a retread, and I don't mean that in a mean way, you get a guy that is passionate, full of energy, hungry, and young. And he loves his university. And I think that is important. And I think this will end up being a pretty good hire for the University of Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, I can't discuss or say anything bad about it. I mean, I think it seems like the right thing to do. Like you said, find that, reconnect the fan base with the athletic department a little bit and make sure that they and the donors and everybody know what's going on and that they can trust who's leading the program now. And I think that's probably the case with Goff here. And so, yeah, I mean, it's always fun to bring somebody back to that has those ties that you are familiar with and is definitely familiar with what it takes at the University of Kansas to have success. So I don't think there's anything bad that I could say about it right now until you actually see what happens and he gets into the job and see the results after that.
Absolutely. So Travis Goff's new AD at the University of Kansas. So we talked about a job opening in Kansas with a football program, although Emmett Jones might end up being the head coach this whole year. And then we'll see how he does, and maybe he'll become the full-time coach. But who knows? You can speculate all you want. But there is another job opening college men's basketball, and it's at a high-profile university. Think about this. Indiana had an opening. They filled it with Mike Woodson, who is an Indiana grad who has not been a head coach at the college level but coached in the NBA. North Carolina, Roy Williams unexpectedly retires at the age of 70. Hubert Davis is the heir apparent who's never been a head coach, but he's been on the staff for 9 years under Roy Williams, so he's promoted within to the head coaching job. Oklahoma, they lure Porter Mosier from Loyola Chicago to be their new head coach after Lon Kruger unexpectedly retired at the age of 68. Texas, many people didn't see Shaka Smart leaving Texas for Marquette. Texas had an opening. They filled out Chris Beard, who leaves Texas Tech, and then he takes Jarence Howard, an assistant from KU, to Texas, and Chris Beard is putting together a pretty good staff at the University of Texas. And if I think I would be a little bit worried if I'm a KU fan and even a Baylor fan about Texas, because you saw what Chris Beard did at Texas Tech. You would think he could do something good at Texas, but who knows? We've said that about a lot of coaches at Texas. Texas Tech has an opening, and now they don't, because Mark Adams, assistant coach known for his defensive genius, he was promoted within to be a head coach. And now Arizona has a head coaching position open as Sean Miller. They mutually parted ways, basically. They say they fired him. Other stories say they basically mutually agreed to it. Whatever you want to argue. Bottom line is Sean Miller is no longer the coach at the University of Arizona. And this does tie into the University of Kansas and their situation with Bill Self, because Sean Miller and Arizona are facing level one violations, and he's now been let go. And, of course, you heard some of the audio tapes of Sean Miller on there talking about money, DeAndre Ayton. Of course, who's now with the Phoenix Suns in the NBA. But people want to compare the two, Arizona and Kansas, in regards to the level one violations that are being alleged against the universities and so forth and so on. And people say, well, why didn't they fire Sean Miller right then and there? Well, I think, you know, maybe they could have. They didn't. They let it play out. And then so people are saying, okay, Arizona, they fire their coach. And KU gives a lifetime contract. There's the difference. There is a difference, and honestly, it comes down to winning. If Sean Miller this year made it to the Final Four, he would not be fired right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you may say, well, what do you mean? They got all this investigation stuff and all these level one violations being put on them. That hasn't changed from a few years ago. What's changed? He's not recruiting as well, obviously. So the situation hampered his coaching ability and to recruit. And so when Arizona... they can simply say it's because of lack of success. We expect more at University of Arizona. They can hide behind that a little bit. At Kansas, Bill Self still went, was a four seed in NCAA tournament, second in the Big 12.
You can't say that KU's fallen off a cliff, although you can say that KU's recruiting has been impacted by the cloud of the investigation as well. But the difference between the two right now are both universities are being investigated for level one violations, multiple level one violations. But Kansas is still winning, maybe not at the level of being a one seed every year, but they're still winning more than Arizona. And thus Arizona decides to walk away from Sean Miller. So people say, well, why did it take so long to fire Sean Miller? Well, because they kind of probably waited for him to not be very successful, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, but the notice allegations was guaranteed to arrive someday, meaning Miller would be running a program under a cloud for years and without the cheating assistants who helped him build it. Recruiting did fall off, and they could have fired Miller a few years ago, but instead they didn't, and now they're doing it now. So the obvious candidates to replace Sean Miller at Arizona would be Gonzaga associate head coach Tommy Lloyd, Arkansas head coach Eric Musselman are a few that are being mentioned. Also, Georgia Tech coach Josh Pastner, who, of course, was on the Arizona team under Lute Olson, won a national championship, but he was basically a bench player, of course, at the end of the bench. Pacific coach Damon Stoudemire, who was an outstanding Arizona point guard when he played there in his days and a good NBA player as well. Sacramento Kings head coach Luke Walton, former Arizona Wildcat, certainly. And Los Angeles Lakers assistant Miles Simon, and KU fans know all about that guy because he helped beat Kansas in Sweet 16 in 97. Of course, Arizona went on to win it all with Miles Simon and Dickerson Bibby. And Mike Bibby. And, I mean, that team was loaded with guards. Jason Terry came off the bench for crying out loud. And he was an NBA player for 15 years. And Lou Olson won his one and only national championship at Arizona in 97. So there's some familiar names there when you look. Lots of ties to Arizona, former players, and we'll see what Arizona does. But Sean Miller is out at Arizona. So you think about it, it's been a busy offseason already. Indiana, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Texas, Texas Tech, and Arizona all having openings, and all of those are some pretty significant basketball programs.
And the two teams you bookended there, that's a rough month for the Miller family, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Archie
yeah.
at Indiana and now Sean at Arizona.
Yeah,
it is interesting that it took this long for Sean, though, because, I mean, they had a self-imposed postseason ban this year, so they weren't going to make it to the postseason regardless of what their record was, right? So he wasn't going to be able to go on that run, you know, like to make himself look better.
Right.
To give him, you know, I mean 17-9, not a great season for Arizona, so I can see why it happened. But it is interesting that it took this long for it to happen because, the writing has been on the wall for quite some time down there.
Right. Absolutely. So while Arizona fires their coach, KU, of course, gives a lifetime contract to Bill Self. KU made that official, of course, on Friday. They had a 35-word clause in Self's so-called lifetime contract. The surprise was that KU spelled out that support, saying Self would not be fired due to any current infractions matter. That infractions matter happens to be one of the biggest out there at the moment and one of the most significant in school history. KU is charged with 5 level 1 violations, the most serious stemming from the FBI basketball scandal that emerged in September of 17. The NCAA called the violations egregious and severe. The NCAA said Self is responsible for violation of the coach responsibility bylaw. Self and KU have maintained from the beginning they disagree with a large portion of the NCAA allegations, but that's what's out there. And KU goes lifetime contract and even protects Bill Self, although he would take a 50% cut in his pay if he's found to be guilty or tied to these violations and so forth and so on. Lots of lawyers get involved in these contracts, and even more so in this situation, I would imagine. And a lot of people are like, well, let's just KU, all KU cares about is winning. All KU cares about is winning. That's the only reason they did that. And Arizona fires their coach. KU gives their guy a lifetime contract. Isn't that what every university is all they care about in Power Five universities is winning? I mean, that's what it is all along. It's always about that. Mm. It's always been about that. You don't sit here and act like you're high and mighty here. Don't act like, you know, if you're a Oklahoma fan and you're going to start taking shots at KU because of what they did. Are you kidding me? Oklahoma would probably do the same thing. Because here's the thing. There's nothing that's been... I think the key to this part to me is that clause, because I don't think there's anything wrong with KU doing what they did with the contract, because he was gonna his last year's contract is next season, and what happens if you find out, because we know the NCAA doesn't have a lot of teeth, they seem to have their biggest teeth for the little programs, But when it came to academic fraud in North Carolina, they talked a big game, did nothing. At the University of Miami, they talked a big game, did nothing. There's all kinds of smoke around Duke and Zion Williamson. They do nothing. Mm-hmm. But then they're going to, and then all of a sudden, Maryland, Arizona, and Kansas are going to get drilled. It's like, until that happens, why would you believe there will be a significant punishment? Because the NCAA hasn't done anything to the big programs.
Yeah.
And Kansas is, of course, a blue blood in college basketball. So does it behoove the NCAA to make an example out of Kansas? Maybe. But here's the thing I've said all along. Whether Kansas is guilty of all this stuff or not, they're not the only one doing these type of things. It's just that maybe Kansas and, of course, Adidas weren't as smart as the other shoe companies. Nike does this stuff. Under Armour does this stuff. Trust me on this. It's just that Adidas was not as good at hiding it, perhaps. KU wasn't. Maybe they got tied with the wrong people, of course. That happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. Once again, these are violations, allegations, and we know that there are facts out there from the FBI case before, too. But the question is, what will the NCAA do? And if they end up doing nothing and Kansas didn't do anything for Bill Self, Bill Self might have walked away from the University of Kansas when his contract ended, or maybe sooner. Because he can get options. He's got options out there. There's other colleges that would hire him. He could go to the NBA, no doubt. So Bill Self had leverage there, even though there's a cloud over the university with the men's basketball program with that investigation by the NCAA. But if you go off of history, the NCAA is not going to do much. And if they don't do anything or don't do much, then would you really just risk letting Bill Self go and not have a plan in place to be the next head coach of Kansas after Bill Self, who is considered by, you know, depending on who you talk to, Bill Self might be the best coach in college men's basketball. He's definitely one of the top 10, if not the top 5. Now, yes, he doesn't have as much success in the tournament in regards to Final Fours and national championships, but you can't argue that he gets a 1 seed, a 1-4 seed every year for 18 years at the University of Kansas. He's a winner, wins conference championships and all that. But Kansas didn't want to risk that because the history shows, and usually you can learn from history, is that the NCAA talks a big game, but they don't do anything except for the little tiny school like Stephen F. Austin. They won't do stuff to Kansas and Duke and Kentucky. At least that's what you feel until something changes that narrative. So if you're Kansas, you say, listen, we feel very strongly that the NCAA can't do much to us. Kansas, quite honestly, some people look at what Kansas is doing and I've read some stories that secretly some universities or coaches are people tied to other Power Five programs actually admire what Kansas is doing because they're basically saying, we're not afraid of you. We're going to go toe-to-toe with you, NCAA. We're going to not back down. In fact, we'll double down. We'll give a lifetime contract to our coach. We'll bring Snoop Dogg in for late night in the fog. We're not worried about you as much as everybody thinks we're worried about you. And they've got they've legaled up, obviously. They've lawyered up. And would you risk losing Bill Self altogether when you still don't know if anything's going to happen to your program from the NCAA? Of course not. So now, if Bill Self was if he had 4 years left on his deal, maybe Kansas didn't have to do anything. But in this situation, I think they did. I think the key, though, is that 35-word clause, which, you know, let's be honest. If you're Bill Self, are you going to agree to that contract without some protection?
No.
Of course not. Although I would argue that if you are absolutely positively know you didn't do anything wrong, why do you need a clause? There's the flip side of that.
Yeah. It's still I feel like it's still hanging, and Curtis Townsend might be the one that takes the fall.
Oh, I think so.
If something actually comes down.
He's the one on record.
So Bill Self's fine, right? Mm-hmm. Bill Self is in there, and they have this clause, but you know, Curtis Townsend's probably going to be the one that takes the fall within the program.
I think you're right.
If they actually get those sanctions. Now, if nothing happens, then Curtis Townsend's probably all right, too. Like, he'll just stay there and do his deal. And you know, obviously the Adidas rep has already had his sentencing and everything's gone through with TJ Gasnola there. But, if anything comes down, that clause is in there. And yeah, if I'm Bill Self, I'm absolutely – I mean, I'm asking, like, what do we put in here to make sure that – because you guys have said this whole time that you trust me that I didn't know what was going on, right? So you need to put that in writing and make sure I'm still here if something else comes down on the program because you backed me so far, but are you really backing me?
Right.
And so that's why that clause is in there.
Right. Bill Self told a small group of reporters on Wednesday, yesterday, the chancellor explained the contract to the NCAA. He talked with them before he did it. That wasn't my call to determine how it looked. It was a chancellor having confidence in the way we've done things. I can't go into any details, but the media doesn't know what's going on with our NCAA investigation. Who really does know? I'm not saying we know either. Schools don't usually alert the NCAA of new coaching contracts. This might be different. Kansas officials are frustrated at the length of the investigation that has hung over the program for more than 3 years. It's impacted recruiting, as we've noted. Kansas sources have indicated they hope for resolution of the case before next season. Self admitted to seeing some national backlash to both the timing and nature of the contract. He understands that. It will be interesting to see how it plays out. I will say this is, and I'm just connecting maybe the dots here. Maybe there's nothing to it. But Jarence Howard has been on that staff, and now he's going to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, it's like Kansas to Texas. I mean, he might move up a step on the bench with Texas. I don't know what their pecking order is with Jarence Howard and the assistants they've hired under Chris Beard at Texas. And I'm sure he got more money.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder if that is maybe a precursor to we will find out more about the situation with Kansas. And Jarence Howard is like, I know some stuff, and I'm, you know, here's my opportunity. And maybe they're coming close to resolution on this case, and I'm out of Dodge, and I go to Texas, and I'm squeaky clean, or no, there'll be no problems for me. And we see that all the time. Coaches go to other places, whether it's assistants or head coaches, and they don't, nothing happens to them. It happens to the previous regime, the previous university they were at, and it's the next set of kids that come in that had nothing to do with any of it that gets punished. Thankfully, yeah. Oklahoma State got to play an NCAA tournament, Cade Cunningham, because otherwise they were the ones that would have been punished for what an assistant did years back. So NCAA takes forever to decide what they're going to do. That takes forever on their investigations, and they honestly cannot keep track of hardly anything that's happening under their own watch with all the universities and coaches and athletic directors and presidents and chancellors and what they're doing with their athletic programs. And I still don't think Kansas is going to get a major, major punishment. I guess depends on your definition of major. Could they maybe get probation for 1 year, no postseason play for 1 year? I could see that. And that's what somebody was saying. Oklahoma State doesn't seem to be nearly as bad, and they were going to get a postseason ban for 1 year. And Kansas, it seems like the allegations are worse with 5 violations, that Kansas then could get 3-year probation or 3-year postseason ban and limits on scholarships. That would be a major punishment, no doubt about it. But if you go off of history, if there is any punishment, it probably won't be super significant. Really, the punishment has already occurred in a roundabout way for Kansas is that, and granted, people ain't going to feel sorry for Kansas. Oh, boo-hoo-hoo, you went from a 1 and a 2 seed to now a 4 seed, and you didn't finish the first in your conference. But Kansas, no doubt, is not as good as they've been in the past this past year, and they aren't getting those top-flight recruits as much as they've done the last few years because of this cloud that's hanging over their head. No doubt about that. And so, in a way, that's been a roundabout punishment. Maybe that's all the punishment that they actually got to deal with, and NCAA has no claws, no teeth, and don't do anything to KU. Or KU gets their lawyers and legal teams find out dirt on the NCAA, and they could use it against the NCAA. And then KU is going to get off scot-free and then go back to the way it was, where they can get even more McDonald All-Americans and convince them to come to Kansas. I don't know. I have no idea. I can't predict the future. If I did, I wouldn't be here. I'd be on the beach sipping Mai Tais and drinking margarita or whatever it might be. I'd be enjoying a view of the ocean is where I would be if I could predict the future. But if you learn from history, and I've been saying that through the NCAA tournament, learn from history. Gonzaga, odds are, isn't going to win the national championship because they're undefeated. It just doesn't happen. If you learn from history and understand and study history a little bit, it tends to repeat itself. The NCAA does not have a history of coming down hard on anybody other than very small schools.
Yeah. Well, I think some of these schools like Arizona, like we just talked about, had their postseason ban self-imposed this year, right?
Yep.
They get ahead of it.
That's what
they
did.
And they just take care of it themselves, right? And if they probably felt like this is the year, we're not a national championship contender anyway. Let's go ahead and self-impose a postseason ban. Now, KU could do that, but they're still going to fight it. I mean, they're in a different situation here. They want to fight it. They say we didn't do anything wrong. You know, it was out of our hands, and it wasn't our deal. So they're fighting it. Now, some schools have already said, nah, we're not going to fight it. We're just going to institute a ban and call it good so we can get ahead of this. And in the end, the NCAA will just get off our back, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens to a lot of schools. And the NCAA, in turn, does get off your back because they think you're making an effort, right?
Right.
So this fight is between KU and the NCAA right now. And I don't know that any of the other schools really have a big fight. I don't know if Maryland has ever done anything yet, but But it's KU and NCAA fighting against each other right now, and neither one of them's going to budge, I don't think, until everything actually gets figured out.
If Bill Self is fired without cause, he will be owed only a year's salary, $5.41 million, which Kansas is used to paying out, that's for sure. Bill Self said, is it guaranteed for a lifetime? The answer is no, it's guaranteed for a year. It's a lifetime deal as long as we do what we're supposed to do. If we don't, there are decisions that can be easily made. And then also part of the delay in this whole thing as well is KU is one of the first cases placed in NCAA's new third-party resolution process, and COVID-19 hit. That slowed down the process and so forth. The NCAA has said that Self and assistant Curtis Townsend embrace, welcome, and encourage Adidas to influence recruits to sign with Kansas. One of Self's attorneys is already on record threatening to sue the NCAA. Yeah, it could get even dirtier and muddier and crazier in the next year or two or next 12 months. And once again, will the NCAA have the teeth and the fangs and the claws to do what they believe they need to do? And history shows that they don't. And I think that's what Kansas is banking on.
Yeah.
I really do. I really, really do. All right, the Masters. Before I get to that, we were talking about the greatest college basketball games of all time. And the reason brought up because UCLA-Gonzaga, you know, I read people right away, oh, that was the greatest game of all time. It's like, really? If you stop and think about it, probably wasn't. But here's another one. 1957, before I was born, I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. KU and North Carolina national title game, 54-53 in triple overtime. I'm sure that was one of the greatest of all time as well. Not a lot of offense, but at that time there wasn't as much, and there wasn't the three-point shot either. So that's another one to add to the list of great games. And, of course, if you just think about your own individual team and think about the great games for your program, like whether you're a K-State, OU, Nebraska, you know, fan, or KU fan, you're going to remember those more so than others. But, yeah, you could put together quite a list.
I mean, I'm thinking like the KU-Texas Western game in 1966 might be on that list. Right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I just was looking up the score of it, 81-80 in double overtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be one. No
Should
doubt.
They step out of bounds or not? That's the question, right?
Right, exactly. Yep.
So KU fans would probably say, no, it's not a good one because we lost.
Right, sure. No, that would be an example. Yeah, I mean, every program's had some great games, whether it be on the road, home, or in an NCAA tournament. And it's really based on your opinion. I think the key, once again, is are we talking the best game? Are we talking about the best ending or the best shot, best game-winning shot? And those are different arguments. I think some people get a little bit, when they say that's the greatest game I've ever seen, that means you're talking about from the beginning to the end. That's how I take it. That's the best game. And UCLA Gonzaga, no doubt, is way up there because that was high quality
from start to finish.
KU Memphis was not. And sorry, wasn't. And I enjoyed the game myself. But
I watched it with you.
I know, it was a boring game. It really was.
We made several comments during the game about, man, this is not a great game.
Was not. And there's other great close games, NCAA tournament, that were great games per se, but they weren't the greatest of all time just because they had a great shot at the end or whatever, some crazy comeback. But that's, you know, here's another great game. It wasn't necessarily a great game. It was a great ending. Was that Illinois comeback against Arizona? But Bill Self is head coach, or Bruce Weber was the head coach in Illinois when they came back from 15 down to beat Arizona in the, what was that? The Elite, well, that was the year that Bruce Weber and Illinois went to the national championship game.
Yeah, it was Elite Eight.
Yeah, it was Elite Eight. Yeah, Arizona had that game won and couldn't get it done. So I saw some highlights from that. That was an unbelievable comeback. But are we talking – that wasn't a great game up to that point because Arizona was controlling it. But, you know, some Illinois people will say, well, that was the greatest game I ever saw. Well, greatest ending, but was it really the greatest game? Did you enjoy being down 15 up to that point? I know that game really stunk for you until the final. Kind of like KU Memphis. Were you really a fan of that game, KU fans, until 2-12 remaining? Which you weren't a fan of 2-12 remaining either until you weren't really going nuts until Chalmers hit the shot to tie it.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden that game was a great game. Chalmers misses three and you lose. KU fans are not even talking about how that was a great game.
No.
Instead, it'd be Memphis. They'd be talking about it. So it's all in the eye of the beholder. Okay, the Masters beginning today. Dustin Johnson, defending champion from November, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And three players have gone back-to-back at the Masters. And Dustin Johnson is trying to become the fourth guy to win back-to-back Masters, and he'd be the first to win two in a span of about, what, 5-6 months? So they are underway, and I'm going to pull up and see if there's score updates here. No birdies at hole number one in the early going, And is there a scoreboard update here? I'm not seeing one. Oh, there we go. Through eight holes, Henrik Stenson's one under. Abraham Anser, Anchor, I don't know how you pronounce his name. He is two under through three, so technically he's in the lead very early. Robert Streb, remember him, K-Stater?
Yeah.
He is even par through eight holes. So it is early. Jason Day has played four holes. He is one under. So long way to go for the Masters, and we'll keep you updated throughout the week. Tiger Woods is not playing in the Masters. Tiger, of course, recovering from his injuries from a car accident back on February the 24th. New information coming out yesterday from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department that Tiger Woods suffered extensive injury from, and that they concluded his speed was in excess of 82 to 87 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone early on that morning. Woods was en route to a golf course where he was filming a segment for a TV show when his SUV left the road and flipped before coming to rest on its side. In a news conference yesterday, law enforcement said that data recordings from the car show that Woods did not brake prior to the accident but did press on the accelerator at a 99% rate. Investigators believe Woods accidentally hit the accelerator instead of the brake. The final estimated speed when Woods' vehicle struck a tree was 75 miles per hour. Woods has little to no memory of the accident and suffered several blows to the head during the wreck. Deputies on the scene said there was no evidence of Woods being under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and they reiterated that finding Wednesday, saying no evidence of alcohol or narcotics were found in the vehicle. The L.A. County Sheriff's Department did not seek a search warrant for Woods' blood samples or cell phone records, saying there was no probable cause for a criminal investigation. No citation was issued either. It was a one-car accident. And so anyway, Tiger was speeding and was going way too fast. That's the news.
Yeah.
There's still questions, isn't there, though? Like, why were you going so fast?
Well, it's like, it sounds like, based on everything there, it sounds like maybe he was late, right?
He was running behind, yes.
And so...
But he must not have been familiar with the area.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, mm-hmm. you're not familiar with maybe where you're going, and in that case, man, it is better to arrive alive than
yeah.
to be in a rush and you're late, you're running behind.
Yeah.
Man, that's just... He's very, very lucky. There's no question about that, but... That's all it sounds like right now, is that he was just late and didn't know where he was, really the area he was in.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like, but there could be more.
But yeah, there could be more to it that we don't know. I'm surprised we got this much, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I eventually something will leak out,
yeah.
and they probably were ahead of the curve on that one, too. So we'll see if anything else comes out in regards to that matter with Tiger Woods and his accident. And, of course, the other questions that people want to know is, will he ever be able to play golf again competitively and so forth and so on? And I have no idea once again. Kevin Durant returned to the NBA hardwood last night. He was perfect in his return, 17 points. The Nets cruised over the Pelicans. James Harden out for probably a week or two with a hamstring injury. Here's an interesting note. I don't remember this guy. I remember him when he played. Former Florida State wide receiver Travis Rudolph was arrested on Wednesday on two murder charges. According to police, Rudolph, age 25, has been charged with first-degree murder with a firearm and attempted first-degree murder with a firearm. He was arrested after one victim was found dead and another was taken to hospital in a double shooting in Palm Beach County. In 2016, Rudolph went viral with an act of kindness while visiting a middle school in Tallahassee. Rudolph befriended a young boy with autism, Bo Paskey, who was sitting in the cafeteria eating alone. He then developed a relationship with the Paskey family. Rudolph was a blue-chip prospect coming out of West Palm Beach, ranked as the number 6 wide receiver in the 14 recruiting class, and was the team's leading receiver at Florida State in 15 and 16. He declared for the draft, was not selected, signed as undrafted free agent, and appeared in 7 games over 2 seasons with the Giants, and his time in the NFL appeared to end in 2018 after tearing his ACL as a member of the Dolphins practice squad. But now he's been arrested on first degree and attempted murder charges. That's so sad. You know, we try to have good news of the day, and the good news of the day, I think I remember reading this story, actually, about that viral act of kindness back in 2016. What a great story. And then next thing you know, 5 years later, once again, he's arrested. He's got his day in court, right to defend himself. Maybe he didn't do all those things. We don't know. But he's been arrested because of those charges. And, it's just amazing how things can change over time if, in fact, it's true that he's guilty of doing the horrible thing.
Absolutely. When you brought this up, I thought there was another thing that happened yesterday in South Carolina. Did you see about that? Philip Adams used to play for the Raiders.
Uh-uh.
killed five people and himself in South Carolina, like a prominent doctor.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, that's pretty much, that's all done and over with. I mean, it was murder-suicide deal, and man, he played for the Raiders, and I was kind of looking him up here just a little bit ago. But yeah, prominent doctor, four other people. He was 32 years old.
32 years old, played for the Niners and
Niners
the Falcons.
Niners started, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I kind of thought when you started talking like that, that's where you're going. It's kind of crazy that there's a couple NFL players that are involved in those kind of things.
Suffered multiple injuries in the NFL, including concussions. And see, that's where you're going to go,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're going to.
That's your first thought. I mean, that was my first thought right away.
Where the suicide came from, they're
CTE.
Probably going to do some investigation on his brain. And
well, if the family allows it.
If they allow that to happen, I'm sure they want to have that to happen.
Man. Hate to see that, no doubt.
Nice.
So, yeah, two tough stories in the show with there. Two players that used to play in the NFL and involved one charge of murder, the other killing five and then taking his own life. Man, oh, man. All right, latest sports information available to you locally, nckssports.com. And once again, we have our newest Athlete of the Week story posted there. Congratulations to Beloit sophomore Logan Arrowsmith.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.